Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Traveler, episode 136. Today, the amateur traveler goes to Western Australia. Hear about national parks, swimming with porpoises, and the backpacker's bus. Today on the amateur traveler. Welcome to the amateur traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into today's interview, I have a couple news stories for you. The first news story that gave me a bit of a chuckle was an article from MSN.com, and it was called The 10 Wacky Complaints About Air Travel. It's different things that people are complaining about that you might not expect, and I'll read you just two of them. First one, and these are all written from flight attendants. Complaints about late arrivals are so common that I recite the canned response by rote. I am sorry for your inconvenience. Please check with a gate agent or customer service representative for connection information, but only twice I've had a passenger complain that the flight was arriving too early. What to say? Perhaps, I'm sure we will do better to delay you next time. And the other one I liked because it corresponds with a little pet peeve I have is water landings. I occasionally get grumblings about the safety demonstration. Someone doesn't like the look of the video presenter or thinks the seatbelt information is stupidly self-evident. But I was surprised when an older passenger became irate after the safety demonstration. He didn't speak English very well, but he had picked up on the part about the water landing and complained vociferously that he had not been forewarned that this flight would be landing in the water. His concern was that he didn't know how to swim. It took a good 20 minutes to get him to understand that we fully intended to land on solid ground. I knew somebody when I worked at Apple that did a presentation for Boeing and had the chutzpah to preface his talk with, "Water landing, isn't that really just a crash?" And file this next article under things that make you go, huh. There's an article that I saw in USA Today, "Airlines Slow Down Flights to Save on Fuel." Drivers have long known that slowing down on a highway means getting more miles to the gallon. Now airlines are trying it too, adding a few minutes to flights to save millions on fuel. Southwest started flying slower about 2 months ago and projects it will save $42 million in fuel this year by extending each flight 1 to 3 minutes. There's more information there, but basically they're slowing down flights from 542 miles per hour to something like 532 miles per hour. And just that difference, what might add in a few minutes for a longer flight, will not be noticeable to most people and will save a lot of fuel. Links to both of those stories will be in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Matthew Kepnes. Matthew has come to talk to us about Western Australia, but Matthew, you've actually been on a much larger journey than that. Welcome to the show, first of all.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
And then why don't you tell us a little bit about the larger journey here for a minute before we start diving into what we had decided to talk about, Western Australia.
In the winter of 2005, I took a trip to Thailand. It inspired me to break out of my cubicle and see the world. A year and a half later, July 2006, I set off on a round-the-world trip that was supposed to last 12 months, and in the end, lasted 18. And it took me to over 15 countries, one of them being Australia.
And then you can read about Matt's adventures both in the past and then also a future trip that's coming up in nomadicmatt.com. We'll mention that again at the end, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But we decided when we talked about the places that you'd been and the places we'd already talked about on the show to focus in on Australia, and particularly on Western Australia. Why Western Australia? You went to 15 countries, so why does that one stand out?
I landed in Western Australia first, and I was very glad I did. You think of Australia, and you think of endless beaches, the outback, really friendly people, great weather, little towns. That's Western Australia. That Crocodile Dundee, that's Western Australia. Eastern Australia was very lovely, but I found it to be very Americanized. And so Western Australia sort of had this Australia allure to it, what you thought it might be. It was much cleaner. It was more natural, less developed.
And what were the highlights of Western Australia?
The highlight for me was Perth. It's the capital of the territory of Western Australia and the main city in the whole region. And to many Australians, it's the end of the world because it's so far removed. And many of them don't get out there. Mm-hmm. And it's probably one of the most isolated cities. And so it really has this very nice feel to it. The locals are all very friendly. It's like a small community because not many people get out there. So everyone seems in some way know each other. And they're really friendly and very open and willing to talk to anybody. I was very amazed that just walking out at night, everyone was willing to strike up a conversation with me. The weather was beautiful. It's right on the beach. Great surfing. The atmosphere was very contemporary. And so I find that to be one of the man-made highlights.
Okay.
Naturally speaking, I would have to say, of course, Ayers Rock. Though that's sort of technically in the red center, it's still outback Australia. So I really like that a lot. Ayers Rock, or Uluru as the Aborigines call it, was just a wonder to behold and everything you would think it would be, even though it's just a big rock in the middle. But the color, the way the wind has shaped it over the years, is very impressive. And especially nice watching the sunset over it as the reds and the oranges change depending on the position of the sun.
You talked about the weather being good. What time of year did you go?
I went in November, which is...
So the beginning of summer?
Yeah, the beginning of their summer. It's also their dry season. So it was pretty warm. I would say high 80s Fahrenheit. So the weather's really nice. Every day is shorts and t-shirt weather, beach weather all the time. It doesn't really rain a lot, so the sun's always out.
What was your overall itinerary as you were in that part of Australia?
Well, I was coming from Thailand, so I flew right into Perth, and from Perth I went north up the west coast to Broome, which is this tiny little sleepy town with endless beaches, and gives you great access to the Kimberleys, which is a major natural area of Australia. Lots of estuaries and crocodiles. And then from there I went up to the north to Darwin, through the Red Center, past Uluru, into Melbourne, and up the East Coast, making a giant S through the country.
Okay. And how are you getting around then?
It was a combination of backpacker buses, hop-on, hop-again tours, airplanes, and Greyhound buses.
Okay. Let's break down those as options and how they worked for you. So, for instance, backpacker buses. I hadn't really heard about backpacker buses in Australia as a destination.
When I was looking into the cheapest way to get around the country, I found that sometimes, and this was mostly true in Western Australia, where transportation isn't as great and bus schedules aren't as frequent, that this was really the best option because they allowed you to get on and off whenever you wanted while still taking you to the final destination. So I took one from Perth to Broome and got off a few times, got on a few times, and there's no extra fee for that. Within all of this charge is a tour option. They'll take you to a few places sort of in the outback. They'll drive you off the main roads, give you more of a sightseeing feel than you would get with just getting on the Greyhound bus and going from point A to point B.
Now, and taking you out on the outback and dropping you off sounds like what they do with the people who haven't paid. They drop you off at a town in the outback or?
The backpacker buses?
Yeah.
Yeah, they have frequent destinations,
okay.
Just like the Greyhound. And so they'll drop you off at towns, usually at a hostel,
okay.
You know, door-to-door service. a few of the nights, the whole group of us that was on the bus at the time camped out in the national park. That was very nice. They provide more than just a busing experience. It's sort of like a tour that you can leave at any time and join again later.
Interesting. Mostly young people?
Mostly young people. Western Australia sees a young crowd, but slightly older than the crowd on the East Coast. The East Coast is so famous for the parties and, well, essentially just the parties. the Gold Coast and Brisbane,
right, sure.
And Fraser Island, Sydney, that a lot of people that go to Australia go there. They don't get out to Western Australia. And those that do really took the time to save up and get out there. So while a young crowd, I would say mid-20s and up, you don't really see a lot of 18-year-olds fresh out of college there.
Okay.
They tend to head to the East Coast to party.
Okay. And how much had you planned this ahead of time? Is this something that you needed a lot of planning for, or did you do a lot of planning, or did you just show up in Perth and stumble across the backpacker buses?
For me, I like to plan a little bit of my travels before I go anywhere, though not too much, because as my mother will tell you, she has a hard time following me around the world because every time I call, I'm someplace different than I said I would be. So I try not to plan out things out too much. Otherwise, I get left with unused tickets. And originally, I was going to buy my bus ticket before I left the country in 2006. I'm glad I didn't because I ended up in Australia 7 months later than I thought it would be.
Oh, okay.
So I just kind of show up. I planned out my route, and I planned out a general time frame, and then I just leave the rest to chance.
Any other comments about the other ways that you use to get around?
On the East Coast, it's very cheap to get around. But in Western Australia, transportation costs are very high because everything is very spread out. I drove the distance from New York to California just getting up from Perth to Broome.
Okay.
So it's very expensive to get across. So funny thing is, flying actually becomes the cheapest option.
Okay.
After I had done the bus tour because I wanted to see the outback, I flew a lot because it was obviously the cheapest option. That's something a lot of other travelers can look into because Greyhound tends to be expensive on the West Coast.
Okay.
While flying actually is pretty cheap in a fraction of the time. One 12-hour bus ride through the outback is all you really need.
What was the biggest surprise?
I would have to say that the biggest surprise was actually the distance. I mean, you see how big Australia is on a map and you think, oh, okay. But I went from Perth to Broome, which is like going from New York to L.A., and I hadn't even covered all of Western Australia. I had only covered a fraction of it. And to me, that was kind of shocking. I didn't expect it to be as big as it really was.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out that they have 36,000 kilometers of coastline. That's enormous
right. To
me. So it was very shocking to see the distance and actually experience that distance. I was also very surprised at the friendly nature of the Australians. I've met tons of Australians in my travels, and they've always been very friendly. But Western Australians seem to go one step further. And I think that might have to do with maybe because there's so few of them out there that they have a very small town mentality to it.
So
just like other parts of the world where there aren't a lot of people, they just want to get to know everybody because they really don't see that many people. So everyone's a new friend.
You said you did some planning before you went there. I don't know what you were using to planning, what resources.
I use the internet a lot to sort of look at maps, but always as a base resource, I buy a guidebook. I don't use guidebooks a lot on the road other than for practical information, maps, and sort of history.
Mm-hmm.
But before I leave, I use them to get a good idea of cost, different options, information on backpacker buses, what a hostel might cost me, through the layout of a city, what's in the city, so I can get a general idea as to how many days I'll spend in one place.
Okay.
Sometimes that's more, sometimes that's less. When I got to a place sort of midway up Western Australia called Coral Bay, I fell in love with it. I had originally only planned to spend 2 days there, but it was just so beautiful. And the reef, the coral reef, is within swimming distance from the beach that I stayed longer.
So very different than the Great Barrier Reef, for instance.
Yeah, very different than the Great Barrier Reef.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I was told that it's a better reef because it's so pristine and there's so few tourists that go there that their natural habitat is much more preserved than on the East Coast. And actually, that was another great thing about Western Australia. There's not a lot of tourists. You might get a more local experience because the infrastructure to handle a wide amount of tourists isn't there. It tends to be a more intimate experience, I mean, a more unspoiled experience, like on that reef. I'm out there snorkeling with turtles and dolphins, and there's not a soul around. Stretches the beach to myself.
Interesting. As you looked at your preparation, as you look back at it now, are the things that the guidebooks or the internet resources you were using recommended that you thought when you got there it was really kind of a waste of time?
No, I thought a lot of the guidebook information was good, but like any guidebook, they only list a small portion.
Sure, sure.
So what they do recommend is very good, but I saw so much more that wasn't even in the guidebook.
Well, and that's the flip side of the question is, what did they leave out? What is the top two or three things that, boy, you really shouldn't go there and miss this, and yet you didn't even see anything about it in the guidebook?
Kargini National Park is north of Coral Bay on your way to Broome.
Okay.
Probably in the Lonely Planet, Australia, it gets mentioned, but not the one I had. And that was a real shame because, to me, it's one of the best national parks that I've ever come across, with the gorges and the little rivers and just the canyons. I thought it was amazing. I'd probably rank it up there with the Grand Canyon in terms of sheer greatness.
Interesting.
The guidebooks didn't devote a lot of time to a lot of the little towns up along the coast.
Sure.
And those are really like the gems. You know, Perth is great. Fremantle is wonderful. But going those little towns really up the coast and really down in the southwest, they really offer an intimate experience. But they're so small that they kind of get glossed over in the guidebooks.
Okay.
So Coral Bay, you know, it's mentioned, but briefly. They mention this other place, Monkey Maya, which is fun because you can go swim with dolphins and see them being fed. But I thought that was really overhyped.
Okay.
It's very nice and very pretty and a nice experience to see dolphins and sharks. But to me, Coral Bay offered a less touristy experience.
More authentic experience, then.
Yeah. There's an airport that takes people right from Perth to Monkey Maya. And so a lot of people just go there. And so there's a lot of tourists there.
Okay.
They all go to see the dolphins. Coral Bay was just one street, and it leads right to the beach. There's maybe 50 people that live in the town. But surrounding them is just oceans and outback and a reef right in front. But Monkey Maya gets more attention in the guidebooks.
And you talked about staying in hostels. Anything stand out about the places that you stayed that you would tell people to either go here or by all means avoid here?
Well, I had traveled around so much prior that I had a lot of Australian friends.
Uh-huh.
So I had up the West Coast. My time in hostels was very limited.
Oh, okay.
And it was mostly with the backpacker bus. And you don't really get a lot of options because these towns are so small, there's just pretty much one hostel.
Okay.
So I can't really recommend any for Perth because I didn't stay any. In Broome, I stayed at one, which is pretty much the only big one in town, so everyone stays there. And that was really great. The name escapes me right now, though.
Okay.
They have a pool, and it's really nice. One thing that should be noted is hostels are pretty expensive in Western Australia, running about $25 Australian a night.
Okay.
Which I thought was very expensive.
Of course, you were also coming from Thailand, so...
Yeah, I also think they can be more than European hostels, which, given the current dollar exchange rate, 25
right.
Australian is just about $25.
Right.
But in many parts of Europe, you can get a 16 euro a night hostel, which is about $20 US.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes in Sydney, I was paying $30 a night.
As we start to wind this down, a couple questions for you. The best day you ever had in Western Australia?
My favorite day in Western Australia was when I went to that national park I talked about, Kargini, and waking up to the sunrise, seeing it through my tent from start to finish, and then exploring the gorges and the little canyons and taking a few swimmings in the swimming pools, and then walking out through the day and then watching the sunset. It was a really wonderful experience, and to me that summarized Western Australia, being right there in sort of this desert outback experience. That was Western Australia to me. And so that would be my favorite day.
Cool. And the most memorable person you met?
That would be my tour bus driver. He was very funny. Wes was his name. He was a real outback kind of guy. He had grown up in a small mining town. He hated the big cities. and he just loved driving this bus because he just got to meet lots of people and be out in nature. And he knew everything about the outback. We would be driving along, and he would just slam on the brakes and run out and come back with this thorny devil, which is this little tiny reptile. Somehow, in all the brown of the outback, he had managed to see this camouflaged thorny devil.
Huh. Now, like so many things in Australia, I'm thinking that I remember that being a poisonous reptile.
No, this one you can actually hold and touch.
So there are a few things that can't kill you in Australia. Okay.
There are very few. He warned us a few nights, watch out for snakes, when we were in the outback.
Right.
He said, some of these snakes will kill you out here. And, well, I checked my tent thoroughly every time I walked in it. Because there are spiders out there, too, that will kill you.
Sure. Funnel web. What do you wish you'd known before you'd gone?
Well, I would say I wish I had known how great it would be, because I would have spent more time out there.
Okay.
My time out there is limited to about 3.5 weeks. And just had I known, because no one ever really visits Western Australia, so I didn't really know much about it. Mm-hmm. But I guess if I had known more and had heard so many good things about it, I would have planned a longer trip through there. Because I did miss a lot, and next year I'll be returning to Australia to specifically go to Western Australia.
Hmm.
I am skipping a lot of the East Coast because I just want to see Western Australia again.
Now, I often ask people questions about, do they have problems with the language? Now, they speak something similar to English in Australia.
Yeah, it's kind of close. But sometimes I wasn't quite sure what they were talking about. For one thing, they call flip-flops, which are sandals,
mm-hmm.
thongs. And
sure.
They would be talking about putting their thongs on. To me, as an American, that represents underwear. Girls' underwear. So I really wasn't quite sure why they were putting that on. Or a schooner, which is a beer. If you want a small beer, it was a midi. So just these small little slang words are kind of interesting to pick up.
Yeah, we had a cousin who was an Australian who lived with us for 2 years, so I know that my ute is my pickup truck, my pullover is my sweater, my solicitor is my lawyer, and all those sorts of things.
Yes, yes. In trading hours. Trading hours are store hours.
Okay.
That's a small difference, but I was like, what are we trading? I mean, I'm sort of giving you money. Is this a barter exchange? Because I'd rather trade you something else and hold on to my money.
Anything of note in terms of Australian food? I mean, many places I think it's very similar to U.S., at least in Eastern Australia, which I've been to, except for the putting the beets on the hamburgers, but, you know, that's a...
Yeah, that was another thing that was weird to get used to. I went to Burger King one day, which they call Hungry Jack's, because originally there was a Burger King there, so trademark issues. And I got the Aussie burger, which had a beet on it, and not a big fan of beets.
A red beet pickle, really,
yeah,
is what we would call it, yeah.
Kangaroo.
Okay.
Was really, really good. It's very lean meat and very tasty.
Okay.
I really like that a lot. I did try camel once. That was just kind of like eating a hamburger, at least the way it was cooked for me.
Anything else as we wrap this up that you would want to send as a recommendation to somebody who's planning a trip to the same place?
If you're going to Western Australia, make sure you see Perth. Definitely see Coral Bay. Make your way north toward Broome. There's not a whole lot to do in Broome, but the journey up there is spectacular. If you are spending a lot of time in Western Australia, definitely try to get to the southern tip. You know, most people do go from Perth to Broome, but there's some great forests far down south.
Great. Our guest again has been Matthew Kepnes. His blog is at nomadicmatt.com, as well as some of the pictures from this trip and some of his other trips. And Matthew, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being here.
I do have one internet resource for you today, and that is TVTrip.com. TVTrip is an interesting site. I had blogged about it on Tripinator.com saying it was a new player in the hotel review space. Someone corrected me and said it's been out there for 2 or 3 years. But what it does is it has a smaller set of hotels. It has about 5,000 hotels right now. But it has a video review for each of them. So you can go and see what a hotel room looks like in more detail than your usual review. So if they do have something on the hotel that you're looking at, that might be a good site for you. TVTrip.com. Coincidentally, with this episode being on Australia, is this piece of feedback that I received.
Hey Chris, this is Gary Searle from the Sydney Visitor podcast, thesydneyvisitor.com. I just want to congratulate you on the show. I've been listening for a few months now, and what I'm doing right now is gradually working my way back through the back catalogue of episodes. I just finished listening to episode 2, The Amateur Traveller Down Under, which is of interest to me because my podcast is about visiting Sydney, Australia. And one of the things I was struck by was the real attention to detail, and there was so much detail in each of those episodes that you put through. And it really got me wondering how you managed to week in, week out, produce and publish a podcast with so much detail. Because I don't know about your other listeners, but for me, when I've listened to an episode of The Amateur Traveller based on a particular destination, I kind of feel as if I've been there. I don't know how you do it. Anyway, mate, I just wanted to say congratulations and keep up the good work. Bye for now.
And just so you know, the easiest way to get your podcast plug is to call any podcaster and tell them they're doing a nice job. That's always a good way to get a link to your show, and we'll put one to Gary's show. Gary, I thank you for your feedback. I do put a lot of time into the show. I put in probably around 8 to 10 hours a week. But the answer to where all the good content comes from is our guests. That's really who does all the preparation for all the good answers and all the good details. So my thanks go out to all the people who've been guests on the show. Now, that being said, not everyone likes every guest, and I'm going to read a piece of feedback that I got from artists this week. I have been listening for about a year and a half and enjoy the variety of your programs. You have a great show. Thanks. Earlier this week, I listened to the Croatia show and for the first time was disgusted with your choice of guests. Until that time, I had only heard presenters be fairly objective. Ms. Castleman was disgusting for at least 80% of the show, shallow, pompous, the ugly American traveler. Draft animals are still appropriate in many places in the world. Her slam of Burlington, Washington told me she has never been there. Please never have her back for anything. There are plenty of people who can present the world as a place for discovery, adventure, and to appreciation of what it is. P.S. I never thought that you'd have a guest that was so horrible I would have to send you a note. Some of the topics aren't of particular interest to me, but the presentations make me appreciate the places. Thanks, artists. And I did write artists back. I was sorry that this particular show didn't work for artists. I would have to say that my opinion wasn't the same. For me, the definition of an ugly American is someone who goes to another country and is upset because it's different from home. And I am always left with the impression of, well, why not just stay home? And I didn't get that impression from Amanda, who was particularly telling us how much she enjoyed the backcountry of Croatia, even though it was challenging at times. So we have a difference of opinion there, but I'd be interested in what other people thought about that particular episode or about any of the episodes. I value your feedback. And with that, I'll give you some ways to get me feedback, and one would be to send me an MP3 file like Gary did, or to leave a voice comment on the voice comment line. The number for the voice comment line is 917-720-2583, or you could drop me an email at host@amateurtraveler.com, or just leave a comment directly on this episode at amateurtraveler.com, but I'm always interested to hear what you think of the show. As always, thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should.